today on The World, time to exhale. We're leaving 2025 on a high note. I'm Carolyn Beeler.
And I'm Marco Werman. This hour, some of our favorite stories from the past year, like a running camp inspiring girls in Nairobi.
Some of them are like really quiet, shy, they're not confident. And then in camp, we are like, you can be who you want to be.
And a musician who pushed his creative limits.
The life without sacrifice, without challenging, doesn't mean anything. So the most beautiful thing in life is to be something to challenge us, to move us forward.
Plus, in Barcelona, a rave minus the drugs.
There are dancers everywhere, but nary a dilated pupil.
And still, the dance floor's hopping. We'll tell you why this New Year's Eve on The World. This is The World. I'm Carolyn Beeler.
And I'm Marco Werman. Happy New Year's Eve, everybody.
We're glad you're spending part of the day with us.
As you hunt around for your party hats, keep us in your ears because we've teed up some of our favorite and most memorable stories from 2025.
We begin, as many years end, on the dance floor. When I say rave, I'm guessing a late night party is what comes to mind, probably one with alcohol and drugs. The rave we are thinking about now is radically different.
First of all, it's during the day, and secondly, the substance of choice is caffeine. The World's Jerry Haddon brought us this report from a coffee rave he attended in Barcelona.
According to classic rave timing, 10:30 on a Sunday morning is when you'd be dragging your exhausted body home, dreaming of your pillow. But for this thump fest, the party seekers, including myself, are just arriving.
Strange time to go out.
Yeah, it's a funny one.
But it's amazing, right, as a concept, because then you just start your day energized.
A strange time to go out, indeed. I'm in an elevator packed with chatty 20-somethings, everyone looking decidedly more hip than the guy with the headphones and audio recorder. But we're all wondering what exactly awaits us on the rooftop deck of this hotel by the sea. Fourteen floors later, we join a crush of people queuing up at various bars, either for fancy coffees or non-alcoholic mocktails. Outside on the sunny deck, a DJ next to an infinity pool fiddles with knobs and bobs his head. Among the crowd of dancers is 29-year-old Mariam Mirzoyan. She's originally from Russia. This is her first coffee rave, she tells me. She says she's digging the healthy vibe.
I like dancing, I like when there is a DJ, but I don't like alcohol, for example, and I don't like how traditionally this kind of event, like parties, would start at 12 and would finish at 5 a.m. in the morning. I'm not that kind of a person, really.
Mariam's with Natalia, a fellow Russian she's just met. Natalia's wearing oversized sunglasses and sipping an iced coffee.
I just would love to meet new people, network a little bit. In Barcelona, it's a big city. It's not that easy to make connections, so I think events like that can really allow you to be more open than usual, have nice conversations, and maybe meet friends who will change something in your life.
This coffee rave is definitely a single scene. Everyone's wearing colored bracelets. You choose one on the way in. Red means you're looking for your next crush. Green, I'm alone, come say hi. Or blue, none of the above.
I'll take the blue one, please.
Once braceleted, I head for the coffee bar, where I try to compensate for my decidedly uncool jeans and plaid shirt.
Hi, how are you doing? Great?
Yeah, how about you?
My, great.
I would like to order the hippest Oatly drink that you have.
The hippest?
The hippest.
You like ginger?
I love it.
Ginger, you like?
Yes.
Feeling slightly more at home with my ginger oat milchiato in hand, I wander the deck outside. There are dancers everywhere, but nary a dilated pupil. No drugged-out late-night zombie vampire vibe here, just non-inebriated people having a ball. Barcelona Coffee Rave's co-founder, Tania Amor, says she used to love late-night adventures, but she and her professional friends reached a point in their mid-20s when they just couldn't keep up the pace.
We were like, we're missing out on the parties that typically in Barcelona run till like 6 a.m. usually. And the next day you're probably hungover and you can't get any work done. Like, we were missing out on that because like, we can't just afford to do that. So we're like, wouldn't it be cool if we could just party during the day, like have all of our friends, still have a good time. We don't have to drink if we don't want to.
That fills a need for a lot of young professionals. It's why Maria Cano and Jordi Jimenez are here. They saw it on Instagram, they say, and we're like, that's our scene.
Eso es lo importante, que luego me puedo ir a trabajar y pasar el día y estoy súper bien.
The most important thing, says Cano, is that I can go to work later today and still feel great. And while she's here, getting down and downing lattes, she can also feel completely safe, says co-founder Amor. For women at normal rave, she says, that's almost unheard of.
For example, in a club, you're always with your girls. You're kind of like this barricade, this wall. You won't let anybody get through. You won't let anybody get through, like, close to your cup. You're always covering it.
Because of date rape, drugs,
yes,
and that.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of things that happen, like, really often, right? So I don't know why. I think here, because it's daylight, it's everybody can see everything, right? So it makes you feel a lot safer.
I take a last swing through Caffeine Land, and I can see what Amor means. A young Spanish woman named Ines puts it this way.
This is way more naive and, yeah, easy and relaxing.
Naive, like, say, a sixth grade dance, back before all manner of vices make it onto the menu of life. It's big kids getting to act like little kids, in the light of day, with coffee. For The World, I'm Cherry Haddon, Barcelona.
Kenyan runner Mary Ngugi is one of the top global talents in the women's marathon. She also has her eyes on another goal, supporting Kenya's young women runners. The World's Bianca Hillier reported this story last spring as Ngugi prepared for one of road running's top competitions.
The Boston Marathon is always held on the third Monday in April, except in 2021. That year, the pandemic forced organizers to move the race to October. The fall date worked out for Mary Ngugi.
And there is Ngugi coming into third.
The Kenyan pro crossed the finish line in third and was later promoted to second after that year's winner was banned for doping. It's her best Boston finish to date. A couple of days after the race, while flying home to Kenya, Ngugi touched down for a layover and connected to Wi-Fi. That's when she saw the tragic news about her fellow Kenyan, Agnes Tirop.
Kenyan runner Agnes Tirop, a two-time world champions bronze medalist, has died.
A 25-year-old world record holder had been stabbed to death. Police are treating her husband as the main suspect.
Tirop's husband was soon arrested and charged with her murder. He pled not guilty, but has yet to stand trial. Ngugi says the news shocked her.
I just could not believe it. And the way back home, it was just thoughts going in your head, thinking like, geez, how promising her life was.
Tirop had just represented Kenya at the Tokyo Olympics and was at the top of her game. Her murder brought attention to the country's longstanding problem with gender-based violence.
There's been history and there's been cases of where girls have been abused. Even if they're not abused, they're intimidated. They feel like they don't have a voice, like they're minor.
For Ngugi, Tirop's murder was the final straw.
And it dawned on me, like, seriously, something needs to be done to try and protect and help girls in Kenya.
Ngugi got to work, and in 2022, she launched Nala Track Club in central Kenya. A video on Ngugi's YouTube shows a group of young girls doing drills before a workout on the track. There's more than a dozen of them, aged 15 to 20, and they all live together in the camp house just a few minutes down the road from Ngugi's home.
They live there, and then in the morning, they go out for training, come back to camp, shower, have breakfast, go to school, and then from school, come back to camp. So camp is like home.
All of the girls have left their real homes and their families to pursue running. They run around 50 miles per week, and some of the girls even travel internationally to compete. Nike pays for all of it. Getting stronger and faster is a focus at Nala Track Club, but it's not everything. Nala is a Swahili word meaning queen and lioness, and Ngugi wants the girls to feel that way.
These girls, when they join us, some of them are like really quiet. They don't want to speak. They're shy. They're not confident. And then in camp, we are like, you can be who you want to be. You can be confident. You can dance. They're happy. They're smiling. They're not afraid to say what they think or what they want.
Ngugi also makes sure the young athletes know they have options. If running doesn't work out, they can be a coach or a physical therapist or a photographer. Historically, Ngugi says, in Kenya, those have been men's jobs, not at Nala Track Club.
When I grew up, I didn't know a female coach. I was never coached by a female coach. And I think it's good for the girls to see women in power.
It's easy to imagine how the young athletes view Ngugi as a role model. She's one of their coaches, a mentor, and a mother figure. A recent Instagram post even shows Ngugi doing one girl's hair. But Ngugi says the admiration goes both ways, and she'll need their support to make it to the finish line of the Boston Marathon.
They'll be watching. They'll be watching, yeah. They're always watching me. I'm not just racing for myself. I'm racing for them as well.
Ngugi will toe the line in Boston next Monday, April 21st. For The World, I'm Bianca Hillier.
It turned out Ngugi finished in 11th place in Boston last spring. She said it was a tough day, but, quote, one thing I insist of my girls at Nala Track Club and my daughter is that we don't give up. Case in point, she raced again this fall in Chicago, earning her personal best time in the marathon, 2 hours, 19 minutes, 25 seconds.
Frequently, the news we bring you about Iran is troubling, but last month marked an historic and inspirational moment in Tehran, the capital. For the first time, a woman conductor led the city's symphony orchestra, overcoming barriers that have been in place for decades. The World's Shirin Jafari tells that story.
Hanis Faryousafi led the orchestra, composed of male and female musicians. This is the first time that a woman leads the Tehran Symphony Orchestra. The performance featured works by both Iranian and international composers. Faryousafi spoke with Iranian media about her achievement. To me, gender is not important in arts, she said. But in Iran, it's rare to have female conductors. For the past 4 decades, since the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the government has imposed restrictions on female musicians. Women are not allowed to sing solo at public concerts with mixed genders. But women have consistently pushed the boundaries, creating openings to showcase their art. Globally, we are seeing more and more female conductors, Faryousafi told Iran's state media. And I hope this opens the path to those who are eager to enter this field. Before Faryousafi, another female conductor, Nosrat Amiri, led the National Orchestra in 2018. Faryousafi was born in Iran to musician parents. She was trained both in the country and abroad in Armenia. She said this week's performance was a testament to the power of female musicians. Peyman Soltani, a musician and orchestra conductor in Tehran, says Iran doesn't have that many conductors, male or female. This is a weakness, he told Radio Free Europe. We need to do more to train and prepare the next generation of conductors. Soltani applauded the fact that the authorities have given permission to Faryousafi to conduct the orchestra, but he also cautioned against seeing this as an end to discrimination against women in music in Iran. Actions like these are only good if they're permanent, he said. But we see that one day a woman leads an orchestra, and then 2-3 months later, these actions are reversed. Still, at Unity Hall in Tehran this week, the audience seemed to savor the moment. Wearing a long black robe and a sparkly head wrap, Faryousafi dedicated her performance to the women of Iran. For The World, I'm Shirin Jafari.
Today on the show, we are listening back to some of our favorite stories from 2025, and tomorrow we're looking further back in time.
Yes, January 1st marks our 30th anniversary on the air. Hard to believe, but we've been at it for 3 decades, connecting you to people in places all around the world.
And you know how at birthday parties sometimes they say, don't bring a gift? Well, we do have a request. Please just send us a short note about what The World, this show, means to you. Head to our website, theworld.org, and click on the link in the banner. Your comments will inspire us as we head into 2026, and we might share your note on the air.
Ahead this hour, a musician who broke the rules in the most delightful, chaotic ways. You're listening to The World. This is The World. I'm Marco Werman.
And I'm Carolyn Beeler. Marco, one story on our show that still makes me laugh was about Hermeto Pascual. This was a story you told when the musician died this fall. An unhappy occasion for sure, but you turned it into a chance to remember how wonderfully strange and innovative his music was. Here's what we aired in September.
Carolyn, this music we're hearing, there's a story behind it that I really want to tell you.
Please do. Spin me a yarn, Marco.
So this is Hermeto Pascual, the legendary Brazilian musician.
I am so intrigued, Marco. It sounds like people blowing bubbles. Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's exactly what you're hearing. What you can't see, though, are five other musicians. They're in bathing suits in a pool of water in the jungle somewhere in Brazil. This was filmed in 1985. They were blowing bubbles. As one of our producers said, they were playing the river.
The river like a musical instrument, you mean?
Exactly. And now they're blowing into these glass soda bottles, and the water levels are different, so the pitch changes. And then you've got Hermeto Pascual, really the center of attention. He's albino. He's in the water, almost with this Buddha-like presence, with this incredible long white beard. And then it looks like he pulls this wooden flute out of the water, like Guinevere's sword. And that's what we're hearing here.
This sounds almost like he's a mystical figure, Marco. Can you tell me more about his backstory?
Well, you kind of really hit the nail on the head there. Mystical figure is correct. Hermeto Pascual was born to a family of farm workers in the Brazilian countryside in 1936. He was born with albinism, and that meant his parents allowed him to stay at home and not work in the fields under that hot, scorching sun. And that's where he discovered his dad's accordion. And by the age of seven, he's mastering it. He's actually playing at country dances, this Brazilian style called forró.
So this inability to work in the fields kind of opened up this whole different world for him.
One crisis created opportunity. Then in the late 50s, he moves to Rio de Janeiro, where he discovers jazz. He joins forces with the great percussionist Erto Moreira. And the rest is history. I mean, he goes on to revolutionize Brazilian music in ways that Brazil's pop stars of the time hadn't even, like, thought about. Miles Davis called Hermeto one of the most important musicians on the planet.
Wow, high praise coming from Miles Davis.
Very high praise. In fact, Hermeto actually composed a few things that Miles Davis performed. You know, some might hear noise in Hermeto's music, and he was seen as this kind of musical oddball. But he was also deeply respected for his innovation. I mean, this guy could make gorgeous sounds, whether it was out of soda bottles or even petting a pig so it got the right squeak.
Wait, what? He was trying to produce, like, a specific note out of a pig's squeal?
Yeah, there was one album where he did this. You know, everything in his mind was musical. So, Carolyn, in 2005, I had this chance to interview Hermeto at a music event in Newcastle in the UK. We were in the green room about 30 minutes before his set, and I was asking him about how, even as he was approaching the age of 70, how he just refused to stop experimenting.
O que faz é justamente a liberdade de intuição. É deixar fluir.
The freedom of intuition and not to be predicted. To go yourself to the unpredictable and not be scared of it.
Hmm. Marco, you said that Hermeto kind of came to music because of his albinism. I'm wondering how that influenced his music as he progressed.
Well, I actually asked him that. I wanted to know, like, because of his skin color, did that push him into deeper creative spaces? I mean, he was made fun of as a kid, was not in the fields with the others. What did that do to his music?
Já vem mais uma pergunta inteligente, né?
One more intelligent question.
Isso é música também, viu?
It's a very musical question.
Isso é música. Eu digo para você o seguinte, que
right,
tudo,
so he told me that's a very musical question, and then he offers me this answer.
Porque muita gente falava assim, Hermeto Pascual, que você...
Even when we born is a sacrifice. So the life without sacrifice, without challenging, doesn't mean anything. So the most beautiful thing in life is to be something to challenge us, to move us forward.
And then, Carolyn, on the spot, Hermeto comes up with this crazy idea.
me entrevistando, fazendo 3, 4 perguntas, pronto, porque o show é curto. Você pergunta o que você quiser, para mim, no palco.
He wants to open the concert. It's serious. He wants to open the concert with you on the stage with him. He wants you to go on the stage with us, asking him 3 short questions. Just take a long breath and then go with us. It's the first time that he invited a journalist to come on the stage.
So, Marco, did you do it? Did you go on stage with him?
You know, I did not want to. I tried pleading with them, coming up with reasons like, you know, the show's about you. It's not about me.
Yeah, but it sounds fun.
I have stage fright. That's why I'm on radio, so I only have to look at a microphone.
Ah, ele falou que ele é bom na rádio, que ele gosta só de falar no microfone, não na frente de monte de pessoas.
Isso. Mas feche os olhos.
But close your eyes. And do your best.
So I took their advice and followed him and the band out on stage at the venue in Newcastle in front of, I don't know, about 1,000 people. I have tried desperately to find that audio, but sadly, that tree fell in a forest and no one taped it.
Wait. So they wanted you to perform on stage with them, like with an instrument?
No. Look, so I'm the reporter. Imagine my questions as music. And as I ask them, the band would turn the interview into a musical performance. I know it's performance art.
I have 2 questions for you. First, did you close your eyes like they recommended?
No. I stared into the spotlight in trepidation.
All right. And they told you to ask 3 questions. Do you remember what you asked?
All right. So I was told short, simple questions, and suddenly I'm struggling to think of something smart. So I just reverted to something, a tip that I got some years ago about how to extract something personal from someone, from your guest. And that is ask them about a dog. Do you have a dog? What is its name? And why'd you call it that?
I did not learn that in journalism school, Marco, but it's a good one. Do you remember what Hermeto said?
I seem to recall that I, the reporter as an instrument, if you will, was asking these questions and getting a percussive response from Hermeto's band. So I was part of the song. I was an instrument, I guess. As I said, we don't have that number. So let me take you out on this moment from Slave's Mass, his recording in which he cuddles a baby piglet to evoke an oink or two. He wasn't known as a sorcerer for nothing.
We get to hear him playing the pig.
The late, great Hermeto Pascual. He died at the age of 89.
That was the pig?
That was the pig. You're going to hear a little more.
We aired that remembrance of Hermeto Pascual in September. What a delight, Marco.
I know. I mean, his music was imaginative and utterly unique. And he was constantly challenging himself as an artist. Not to mention anyone who came into his orbit. He made a lot of people happy, including myself.
More of our favorite stories from 2025 are still ahead this hour. You're listening to The World. This is The World. I'm Carolyn Beeler. We're looking back on the past year, as you do on New Year's Eve, and sharing memorable stories from 2025. Migration has been a top international story for many years, with millions of people leaving their homes in search of safer, better lives. One of the biggest migration routes is across the Mediterranean Sea.
Every year, thousands of people risk that dangerous journey, aiming often for Italy as a gateway to Europe. Many people land on the Italian island of Lampedusa and abandon their boats there. Those boats are being given a unique second life through a prison workshop in Milan. Inmates at Opera Prison, one of Italy's largest, are turning migrant boats into musical instruments. The World's Europe correspondent, Orla Barry, reported this story in Milan last summer.
In a small workshop on the outskirts of Milan, Enrico Alorto leans over a bandsaw and slices carefully through a coloured plank of wood. Alorto is a master luthier, and for the past 4 years, he's been teaching inmates at Opera Prison how to make string instruments like violins and cellos out of the wood of migrant boats that have been transported from Lampedusa.
It's important for an inmate to have a job, to earn money and to regain dignity. Second, it's a work that needs passion. It's very important. this kind of job.
A former prisoner, now out on probation, is hovering over a workbench nearby.
Come vedete, sono tutto rovinate, sono...
He shows me how he takes the wood from the abandoned boats and carves it into shape, always making sure to preserve the original paintwork. He doesn't want to say his name, for privacy reasons, he says. Just that he's originally from Ukraine and was sentenced to 10 years for robbery. When he was offered a job at the prison workshop, he turned it down at first.
Io posso dire che ero in situazione disperata.
I was in a really bad way, he says. He was in a wheelchair because of health issues at the time, and he thought there was no way he could do the job. But Alorto, the master luthier, persuaded him to give it a go.
When I met him, he was on a wheelchair. He was depressed. He has been beaten in jail in his country, so had very much trouble. I made a chair for him to work seated, and little by little he's getting better.
The ex-prisoner says the work gave him hope. Maybe he could build a life for himself outside of jail, he says. The foundation behind the project is called Casa dello Spirito e della Arte, or the House of the Spirit and the Arts. Greta Corbella with the foundation says the previous Italian government was a fan of their work. Sometimes it helped pay the transport costs of moving the boats from Lampedusa to the prison yard, she says. But this government is not on board.
Io credo per un disinteresse, semplicemente non hanno, come dire, voglia.
They're not interested, she says. I think they don't care about this project. Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has taken a tough anti-immigrant stance since coming to power almost 3 years ago. And those working with migrants and refugees say attitudes on the ground in Milan have hardened too.
E devo dire, prima dell'arrivo di Giorgia Meloni non avevo mai visto.
Modu Gay, who's originally from Senegal, says before Giorgia Meloni came to power, people didn't openly threaten violence against migrants or tell them to go back to their own countries. But that's all changed, he says. Gay runs a multicultural centre in Milan that brings migrants and locals together through music and educational projects. And he says the workshop at Opera Prison is a great initiative.
Io spero che un giorno non ci saranno più le barche che arriveranno in Italia.
But he says he hopes that one day migrants won't have to make those awful boat journeys, and the instruments will just be a memento of the past. Back at the workshop, Nicolai, a 43-year-old prisoner from Romania, says it's impossible not to think about those migrants when you're carving instruments out of the boats.
Queste cose è impossibile non pensarle, no?
I know what it's like to go to sleep hungry as a child, he says. I can't imagine what desperation drives people to make these journeys. Last year, a group of professional musicians, known as the Orchestra of the Sea, performed at La Scala, Italy's most famous opera house, with the prisoners' violins and cellos. Nicolai, who's serving a 16-year jail sentence, was allowed to attend.
Sì, sono stato l'anno scorso, a febbraio dell'anno scorso, alla Scala, che sono la prima volta che sono entrato in un teatro così grande.
It was the first time I was ever in a theatre that big, he says. And suddenly, I felt like I was winning a battle, he says. A battle against himself. Enrico Alorto, the master luthier, says the concerts have been really moving for everyone.
The instrument contains the trouble of many people. And when the musician takes the instrument, they are not good as the other instruments. They have to work to get the sound. But they understand there is something inside and get the emotion, and the public feels the same emotion.
The next step now is to find musicians or orchestras who will take our instruments to music halls around the world, he says, so we can show the public that out of so much suffering, something of beauty can be created. For the World, I'm Orla Barry. Milan.
In
vitro fertilization, or IVF, was once a controversial procedure. Today, more than 1 in 50 babies in the U.S. is conceived through IVF. But reproductive science doesn't sit still. There are now new research frontiers that may prove even more controversial than IVF ever was. A lot of it is happening in East Asia, where birth rates are in freefall and governments are clamoring for solutions. From Bangkok, Patrick Nguyen reported this story last May.
In a lab in China, scientists are impregnating monkeys, not with embryos created naturally from a sperm and egg, but with a synthetic embryo they made themselves.
Right now, I think that we can culture the monkey embryos in vitro for up to 25 days. So it's about 3 weeks.
After 3 weeks, the monkey pregnancy fails, says Jun Wu, a prominent stem cell researcher who collaborates with these Chinese labs. He thinks eventually they will be able to bring baby monkeys to term. Wu has his own lab at UT Southwestern Medical Center in Texas, where he's making synthetic human embryos. But his research team is not trying to impregnate a person with their experiments.
In the case of human, we are not allowed to do that for ethical and technical reasons.
His synthetic embryos mimic blastocyst, a human embryo at about 6 days old. And get this, they are created from stem cells derived from the skin of a biological male. The things scientists can do in the realm of fertility and stem cells is getting more mind-blowing all the time. Perhaps most sensational are the achievements of Japanese geneticist Katsuyo Hayashi, known for creating mice with two biological dads, or moms.
They grow up, they eat the food, they mate, just like conventionally bred mice.
That's Dr. Hayashi showing off a photo of his experimental mice at a recent TED Talk.
And they can come from two fathers, two mothers, or perhaps other combinations. Thank you.
Wait, hold up. Other combinations? Yep, because this research is all about taking skin cells, then turning them into stem cells, which can grow into anything, a kidney, a sperm, an egg. So it is theoretically possible to scrape skin from a single mammal, make some cells into eggs, other cells into sperm, and create a baby with only one biological parent. The possibilities are wild.
I think the question is, how do we advance the conversation to something that's more meaningful and less polarized and kind of scary?
Megan Muncy is a stem cell biologist with the Murdoch Children's Research Institute and the University of Melbourne. She prefers to focus less on the sci-fi stuff and more on the immediate benefits of this research. For example, scientists can create a zillion synthetic human embryos and run almost any test on them they like, with few restrictions.
These models are models. They're not embryos.
That's important because real human embryos are harder to come by. And in almost every country, there are limits on what experiments you can do on them. With synthetic embryos, scientists can run many types of tests and even test drugs on them, all to solve a vexing fertility mystery. Why does IVF so often fail, forcing would-be mothers to go through round after round of expensive, exhausting treatment?
Doing this kind of research may allow us to understand why we have such high embryo loss when we try to help people have babies with IVF.
But what about in the future, trying to actually impregnate a human with a synthetic embryo, one created from a skin cell? Imagine infertile couples getting to make sperm and eggs and embryos with their own skin, or same-sex couples having biological children with both their DNA. Dr. Muncy says, as great as that sounds, experimenting with human life could create babies with painful disorders, and that's not humane.
Trying to create a pregnancy with these models, it should be banned.
In the US, UK, Australia, lots of countries, it is banned already. But stem cell research is blitzing ahead, much of it in countries such as Japan, where for every baby born, two people die. It's a national crisis. Countries like Japan, with dismal birth rates, may face more pressure to loosen rules on stem cell experimentation. Misao Fujita, a bioethicist with Kyoto University, says the time to start talking about this is now. According to Professor Fujita's research, about half of the Japanese public would accept synthetic sperm and eggs being used to create a child. That's pretty high for a procedure that's currently illegal. As for Dr. Jun Wu, the stem cell researcher in Texas, under Texas law, he can't come anywhere near human embryos.
But in China, though, it's more relaxed. So the government supports this line of research.
China, too, is facing population decline. Beijing can pour loads of funding and brain power at fertility research. Dr. Wu says he knows of at least 8 or 9 Chinese labs making synthetic human embryos and others running tests on monkeys. He is optimistic that one day scientists will use this technology to conceive a healthy human through synthetic sperm or eggs, a process called in vitro gametogenesis, or IVG.
Even though the ultimate goal is IVG to generate embryos, during the process, there's a lot more technologies can be developed that can benefit humankind.
Even if IVG never proves viable, Dr. Wu says if along the way his team can help IVF work better for couples, it would all be worth it. For The World, I'm Patrick Nguyen, Bangkok.
If you're out and about on any given night in Mexico City, you're likely to hear it long before you see it. The pull of a dance beat and the shout of a DJ at one of the city's famous sonideros. These street parties bring people together in parks, plazas, and along avenues. The World's TV's Isaiah took us along on this visit to the neighborhood of Iztapalapa in Mexico City.
The party takes place on a back street near the metro tracks. It's Wednesday at sunset, and people emerge from the subway heading home from work. But when some of them hear the music, they stop to join.
Un ratito para desestresarnos, llegas a tu casa ya relajado, bien bailado, bien sudado y cansado.
I came up to unwind, says Francisco Chavez. It's good therapy to dance a little, sweat a little, and then head home tired and ready for bed, he says. By 7 p.m., there is a crowd. This is a typical sonidero party. No stage, no food vendors, not even drinks, just a DJ with 2 towering speakers and the sense that anyone can show up and join.
Bueno, acá están bailando puros medios metros, okay?
The guy behind the mic is a street DJ who doesn't just play music, he narrates the party in real time.
Ya llegó Carla Galletita. Ándale, medio metro. Que baile el medio metro.
He announces who's arriving, calls out dedications to friends, lovers, neighbors, makes jokes, and keeps the crowd moving. People like when they are recognized in front of the crowd, says Ramon Rojo Villa, a DJ named Sonido La Changa.
Nosotros somos del barrio. Representamos al populacho.
We are from the barrios and we represent the people, says Rojo Villa. These kinds of parties started in the late 1950s in working-class neighborhoods of Mexico City. Locals would set up homemade sound systems in the street and play imported cumbia and salsa records. Music from Ecuador, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Colombia, New York, that became popular here in Mexico at the time. By the 70s, sonidero players had names, styles, and big neighborhood followings. But as the movement grew, so did pushback.
Como despectivo. Es como de barrio, de baja clase, ajá.
Arlette Michel, a sonidero DJ, says these parties had a stigma of being too loud, too public, and probably too working class, she says.
Pues muchas veces han llamado al sonidero así, naco. Como despectivo.
People would say sonideros are for nacos, a pejorative term to refer to working class people in Mexico. Police would shoot down events, confiscate equipment, and fine the organizers. But after years of activism, things started to change. A group of art administrators, including Mariana Delgado, began to make the case that sonideros were an important part of Mexican culture.
De alguna manera,
abrió muchos espacios culturales, académicos.
And soon, sonideros started to get invitations to play in museums, at festivals, and even to represent Mexico abroad. Finally, in 2023, the Mexico City government officially declared sonideros part of the city's intangible cultural heritage. Today, you can hear sonideros at clubs in fancy neighborhoods like Polanco, Roma, or La Condesa. And a growing number of women are stepping behind the mic. They're challenging the old idea that the sonidero DJ is always a man with a deep voice.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Yo soy Marisol Mendoza, la musa mayor.
Marisol Mendoza is the founder of Musas Sonideras, a collective of women from across Mexico who are reclaiming the mic. She says being a female sonidera means facing skepticism, double standards, even harassment. People ask you, did your husband give you permission? Who's taking care of your children while you are here? It's tough, she says. But Mendoza says it also brings opportunities to shift the narrative, reach new audiences, and expand what this culture can be. For sonideros, the mission hasn't changed. Whether the DJ is a man or a woman, whether on rooftops, in plazas or museums, their job is to make people dance. For the world, I'm TV Saicea, Mexico City.
Gracias.
From street music in Mexico City to vinyl in Dubai, just ahead we dig through the record bins with perhaps the most enthusiastic record collector in the UAE. You're listening to The World. This is The World. I'm Carolyn Beeler.
And I'm Marco Werman. In this hour of favorite stories from 2025, I want to go back to a music interview that we recorded in May. Let's once again drop the needle. That is not Quincy Jones nor Duke Ellington. This beautiful piece of vinyl is courtesy of Sala Ragab and the Cairo Jazz Band. Egypt Strut is the title. Recorded in 1972, the record came out in Egypt a year later. On Record Store Day in 2021, Egypt Strut was reissued. Excuse all the notes here, but I collect records, so I geek out on the stuff. We crate diggers are a passionate bunch, and with websites like Discogs and eBay, we've got something of a global network. Our next guest is connected to this world. Jayesh Varalkar is a record collector in Dubai. He shares his passion for music throughout the United Arab Emirates and beyond. He joins us from his home in Dubai. Hey there, Jayesh.
Hello, Marco.
Tell me about the time your passion started and what kind of music were you really eager to collect?
To be honest, I grew up collecting cassettes and CDs back in India. And passion for collecting records, I would say, started somewhere in the middle of pandemic when my wife gifted me a record player on my birthday and things just spiraled out from there.
That is extraordinary. That is my story, too. I collected CDs for ages and used to collect records. And then right in the middle of the pandemic, my family got me a turntable and I started collecting again. So when you started, just tell me what the scene was like in Dubai for record collecting. Did you feel like there were a lot of you or were you the only one?
I definitely was not the only one. Dubai has always been a super vibrant city just because of its diversity. I kind of met so many fellow collectors and who are my now good friends at record stores. So the scene was always there. I think post-pandemic or during pandemic, things just blew out. I think people were looking for more tactile way of experiencing and discovering music.
Wow, that is seemingly a common thread around the globe during the pandemic. A lot of hobbies were picked up and record collecting seems to be one of them. So let's dip into your collection a little bit there, Jayesh. I mean, you've got the song El Haman by Shabtati queued up for us. Tell us about that song and who Shabtati is.
This is what I love about collecting records. You kind of like the music discovery. There is like so many ways to discover music. I think I came across Shep Tati quite recently. There was a dub version of Al Hamam, and then I found out that this dub version was produced by Dennis Bovell, who's like one of the founders of UK Reggae and Lovers Rock. And I think this dub version actually got me into Shep Tati, and then there was like Al Hamam is one of my favorite tracks. It can get party started. بلاني بلا هاني خايف لين نموت وقلبك يا ساني يا نتاليا سهرت عليك ليالي ليالي انتي بين اهلك وانا شاني.
This is fire, Jayesh. Wow, I love it. I mean, as you said, the scene in Dubai really blew up after the pandemic. And in addition to record collecting, you've brought together a lot of people, building the community in the UAE through your organization, Vinyl Souk. Great name. You've got spinning parties, local releases, and music documentary screenings. What's the vibe like at these gatherings?
We have like all sorts of people coming in. We've got longtime collectors, first-time diggers, DJs, musicians, even curious passerbys. And age-wise, I'm a father and I have a nine-year-old and I want to keep our music programming quite inclusive. So we even get like older parents, young kids. We are very blessed that we could cater to that kind of wide demography and diversity in this country.
So let's get back into some of the gems in your collection, Jayesh, our own private discotheque, if you will. Tell us about Night Sky by this ensemble, the East India Company.
Oh, this is one of my favorite. This was probably somewhere in 1987. It's very light on information of this specific project of Biddu. But this kind of like Biddu had this whole thing of like driving what are the future sounds and bringing them and adapting to so many changes of music styles that were happening in 80s, 70s and 80s. He's probably very well known for his Bollywood stuff that he's done and all the indie pop stuff he's done in India. I'm a big fan of Biddu and I'm trying to collect music of his from 70s and 80s. That's what excites me about.
Targeting back to 80s, 90s synth pop there. Wow, that's very cool. You know, we've never met Jayesh, but I kind of get the idea of what you collect. Disco, funky, jazzy. How would you describe your collection?
My collection kind of like evolves around my two alter egos. One of them is as a record collector, and I do collect a lot of left field stuff, like whether it's dub, regional, psychedelic, Arabic funk, obscure synth pop. But I also have another side where I have a residency in listening rooms and listening bars and record bars that are started popping up here, and one notable being Honeycomb Hi-Fi. So a lot of my collection kind of depends on what kind of vibe and mood that I can set at some of this record bars and the gigs that I play. So yeah, it's quite diverse. It's hard to kind of like box myself into any specific thing.
Well, let's end with Possessions / First World Problem by Aubrey. When you sent this to us, you suggested play track one, side B, but that little detail we don't get from streaming. Who is Aubrey?
This is the most influential, UAE's most influential soulful voices. Probably he's an Emirati artist. And I think this track is very beautiful. And this is the only unreleased track on Made in the Emirates compilation. You know, as you said, there's track one, side B. There's something special about flipping the record and discovering what's waiting on the other side. And I wanted that to happen with Aubrey's track. I wanted to set the tone for the side B. And it is quite touching.
Beautiful sounds from the UAE's Aubrey. Jayesh Varalkar is a record collector in the United Arab Emirates and co-founder of Vinyl Souk, a record collecting community in Dubai. Jayesh, it was great to meet you. Great to chat about vinyl with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Marco, for having me over.
And that brings us to the end of the hour and our final show for 2025. The party does not stop here, though, because tomorrow is the world's 30th anniversary on the air. Take a second to drop us a virtual birthday card if you're so inspired. There's a link on our website, theworld.org.
The World is produced by GBH and PRX, broadcasting weekdays from the Nan and Bill Harris Studio in Boston and from the Department of Communication at UC San Diego. I'm Marco Werman.
And I'm Carolyn Beeler. Happy New Year.
The World is supported by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. MacFound.org. By the Lumina Foundation, committed to a fair, universal system for learning beyond high school that offers every American the chance for a better life. LuminaFoundation.org. And by FJC, a foundation of philanthropic funds serving the nonprofit sector with donor-advised funds, fiscal sponsorship, bridge lending, and more. FJC.org. The World's theme music is composed by Ned Porter. The World is a co-production of GBH Boston and PRX. More information at theworld.org.